The Zen Manifesto, Freedom from Oneself, Number 7. An Osho talk given spontaneously at an outdoor meeting to an international audience of thousands of people.
Gyozan said to Sekisetsu, "Tell me what to believe in and what to rely on." Sekisetsu gestured across the sky above 3 times with his hand and said, "There is no such thing." Gyozan asked, "What do you say about reading sutras?" Sekisetsu replied, "All the sutras are out of the question. Doing things that are given by others is dualism of mind and matter. And if you are in the dualism of subject and object, various views arise. But this is blind wisdom, so it is not yet the Tao. If others don't give you anything, there is not a single thing. That's why Bodhidharma said, originally, there is not a single thing. You see, when a baby comes out of the womb, does he read sutras or not? At that time, the baby doesn't know whether such a thing as Buddha nature exists or not. As he grows up and learns various views, he appears to the world and says, 'I do well, and I understand.' But he doesn't know it is rubbish and delusion. Of the 16 ways or phases of doing, a baby's way is the best. The time of a baby's gurgle is compared to a seeker when he leaves the mind of dividing and choosing. That's why a baby is praised. But if you take this comparison and say, 'The baby is the way,' people of the present days will understand it wrongly."
Friends, first the questions from the sannyasins. The first question: I heard you say that the center of our Buddhahood is at the hara point inside the body. Is there also a sleeping Buddha energy in our hearts and in the third eye? Do we all have the same potential of remembering each one of us with her or his unique expression of creativity? Please comment. The hara center is the source of all your energy. It can grow just like a tree grows from the roots into different branches according to a different calculation of Patanjali. The energy can be divided into 7 centers. But the original source remains the hara. From hara it can go up. The seventh center is in the head. And the sixth center is what you call the third eye. And the fifth center is in our throat. And the fourth center is exactly in the middle, the heart. Below the heart, there are three centers. Above the heart, there are three centers. But all these seven centers grow like a tree from the original source of the hara. That's why in Japanese, suicide is called harakiri. People don't cut their throats, they don't cut their heads, they simply pierce a small knife into the hara center. Just exactly 2 inches below the navel, and the person dies, and you will not know at all that somebody has committed a suicide. Just the energy is released from the body, the source is opened. I am trying to take you to the very original source. From there, it is up to you to bring your energy into any center you want. Between the first center, hara, and the seventh center in the head, the energy can move just like the energy moves into different branches of a tree, from the roots to the uppermost flowering. The hara is the source. When it blossoms, it reaches suddenly to the seventh center, piercing your heart, your throat. And at the seventh center, it blossoms as a lotus. Man is also a flowering tree. These are different ways of looking things. Patanjali's yoga is one of the way. Zen is a totally different approach. To me, Zen seems to be more scientific, while Patanjali seems to be more intellectual and philosophical. Zen begins from the very source. The Buddha is not lying anywhere else than in the hara. He is not lying in the heart. The energy can be brought to the heart, then the expression will be love. the energy can be brought to the third eye, then you will be able to see things which are not ordinarily visible. Auras of the people, auras of things. A certain kind of X-ray energy that goes deeper into things. If the same energy moves into the seventh center, according to Patanjali, samadhi is attained. You become enlightened. But these are different calculations. Rather than talking about samadhi, I would rather encourage you to enter into the source of energy from where everything is going to happen. I don't like to talk about the flowers much, because that talk will remain simply conceptual. My approach is more pragmatic. I want you to experience your sleeping energy. And the moment you reach there, it awakens. It sleeps only if you are not there. If your awareness reaches to the source, it wakens up. And in its awakening is the Buddhahood. In its awakening, you become for the first time part of existence. No ego, no self, a pure nothingness. People are afraid of the word nothingness. In the second question, that fear is clear. The second question is, though you have infused the sutras with life and humor for life, Zen remains the stark beauty of the desert, and I long for something else. Why can't I drop the idea that my way is not via emptiness, but fullness? I still carry this longing for some kind of union, a melting outwards rather than dissolving into nothingness inside. With whom you are going to melt outside? You don't know even who you are. And who has told you that Zen is a stark beauty of the desert? Zen is perhaps the most beautiful path, full of flowers, sounds, joy and laughter. But the idea of nothingness creates a certain fear of dissolving into a desert. It is just your mind that makes the difference between emptiness and fullness. In realizing either, you will be realizing the other two, because they are two aspects of one thing, of one phenomenon, which can either be called nothingness or can be called fullness. Zen has chosen rightly to call it nothingness, because fullness can give you misunderstandings. The moment you think of fullness, you start imagining. The moment you think of melting into someone outside, immediately a god, a paradise, a heaven, and all kinds of imaginations arise. And those imaginations will prevent you from going anywhere. I am not helping your imagination at all. I am trying to uproot your imagination from every possible way. I want you to live without images, into utter silence, into nothingness, because that is the only way to attain fullness. When the dewdrop disappears in the ocean, it is not that it becomes nothing. Yes, it becomes nothing, but it also becomes the ocean. In its disappearing as a dewdrop, it is also becoming on the other side the whole ocean. So the fullness and nothingness are not two things, only two concepts of the mind, but in reality, only two ways of saying one thing. But emptiness or nothingness is better, because it does not allow any imagination to arise. Fullness is dangerous. If rightly used, there is no problem. Fullness will also dissolve God and paradise and heaven and hell and incarnation. But mind is capable to use the idea of fullness in a way that it cannot use the word nothingness, to prevent the mind from using the word fullness in preventing you from realizing the reality, from Gautama Buddha onwards, the word nothingness has been chosen. But nothingness is not absence. Nothingness is not dead. Nothingness is fullness, but so full that you cannot define it and you cannot make a limit or a boundary to it. Unbounded fullness and nothingness in experience mean exactly the same. But for the beginner, the word fullness is dangerous. And everybody is a beginner. Begin with something which is less capable to take you astray from reality. Fullness can be used only by a master who knows that nothingness and fullness are synonymous. But for the beginner it is dangerous, because for him fullness means something against nothingness. If fullness means synonymous with nothingness, then there is no problem. Then the desert becomes the ocean. Then there is only beauty and song and dance. Nothingness gives the idea to the mind that everything will be lost. You will be lost. But the truth is, the moment everything is lost, including you, you have gained the whole universe, all the stars within you. And the vast universe inside your heart. It is not losing anything, so don't be worried about nothing. The questioner goes on, is this just my refusal to grow up? Am I fooling myself? Are we all to embrace the Zen manifesto, no matter what type we feel we are? There is no question of type. All types are just superficial. At the innermost core, there is only one existence. Zen manifesto is not for a particular type. It is for all, for man and for women, and for black and white. And for Hindu and Mohammedan, and for Christian and Buddhist, it does not matter what kind of conditioning you have been brought up in. Zen is simply a technique of entering into your veriness. The entrance is so deep that nothing remains. And all is found. Gurdjieff has written a book all and nothing. I would like to withdraw the word end, because all is nothing. There is no question of end. Whatever type you are, introvert, extrovert, it does not matter. You are all part of the same existence. And when you relax into existence, all your differences disappear. Only oneness remains. You can call that oneness whatever you like, but basically it is nothingness. You can give it any color. You can call it by any name, but don't start calling by another name from the beginning, because that can take you astray. Somebody may think that we can call it a god, then he start worshipping a god which is man-manufactured. For the beginner, nothing is the most secure path to avoid the mind playing games. Nothing is beyond the reaches of the mind, so it cannot play games with it. But anything else you call, and mind is capable of playing games with it. The whole effort of meditation is not to allow the mind to play games. It has been playing games for centuries. One has to come to a point to see all the games of the mind, all the gods, all the messiahs, all the prophets, all the religions, all the philosophies. Existence is available to a silent be, not to the learned, not to the well-informed, not to the scholar. It is available to the innocent, and meditation is a way of becoming innocent again. Getting back your childhood, being reborn, knowing nothing, a silence, a joy, a blissfulness arises, which is indestructible, which is eternal. The third question: the other night I heard you say there is no reincarnation, no soul, no spirit after death, only pure consciousness, pure silence. Is it then so that part of us, of our own consciousness, is aware of that endless silence of being part of the whole. All your questions arise out of your mind. And I am trying to take you beyond the mind. Beyond the mind there is no question. There is nobody to ask. But if you start thinking about meditation, that is not meditation. If you start thinking what happens when awareness witnesses the wholeness of existence, if you start thinking, you are moving inside the mind in a circle, in a vicious circle. You may find some answer, but that answer is not the truth. You have to go beyond thinking, beyond questioning. Just be silent, and you will know. You are not, only the universe is. You are just a ripple in the river, arisen in a certain moment and dissolved back again. But not for a single moment separate from the river. This whole existence is nothing but a vast ocean in which all kinds of ripples, tidal waves arise and disappear. And the ocean remains. That which remains is your authentic reality. That which comes and goes is just a dream. Or just a phenomenal illusory reality. For a moment, the tidal wave can think I am separate from the ocean. But you know, however the wave may be tidal, it is not separate from the ocean. Even when it is thinking, it is separate and it looks separate, deep down it is part of the ocean. And I am taking you deep down into the ocean. In that ocean, nobody is separate. Suddenly, a tremendous joy arises that you are eternal, that you are oceanic, that you have always been and you will always be. But not those small personalities that you have taken again and again. this time you stop taking personalities and simply become the whole. The whole feels more cozy than nothingness, but they are simply two ways of saying the same thing. The whole appears cozy. It seems you are becoming more than you were before, and nothing seems dangerous. You are becoming even less than you were before. You were at least something. Now you are becoming nothing. But becoming whole, you have to become nothing. Becoming part of this vast existence, you have to relax the separateness, the individuality. The questioner goes on asking, does the dewdrop still feel or experience some aliveness inside when first it melts into the ocean? The dewdrop disappearing into the ocean feels for the first time a vast life. Only the boundaries that were making it a small dewdrop have disappeared. The dewdrop is still there, but it is no more a dewdrop. It has become the ocean. I have told you about Kabir, one of the most important mystics of the East. When he became enlightened, he wrote down a small statement, the dewdrop has disappeared into the ocean. Bund samani samundam. But before he was dying, he called his son Kamal and told him that please correct it. It was my first experience. Now I know better. The dewdrop has not entered into the ocean. On the contrary, the ocean has entered into the dewdrop. So write it down that the ocean has entered into the dewdrop. Both mean the same, but one is the experience of the beginner, the dewdrop disappearing into the ocean feels like you are going into a vast nothingness. But once you have reached into this vastness, when you are no more, suddenly that vastness is you. There will be no self, no sense of I, but a sense of totality, of wholeness. It is difficult to bring it into language that difficulty is shown in Kabir's changing the statement in fact no statement is right. Whether you say the dewdrop has entered into the ocean, or you say the ocean has entered into the dewdrop, you are still talking of two things, the dewdrop and the ocean. If I was present there, I would have told it is better cancel both. Whatever has happened, nothing can be said about it. One thing is certain, there is no more separation. So who has entered into whom does not matter. There have been two, now there are not two. The sutra, Gayozhan said to Sekitsu, tell me what to believe in and what to rely on. Sekitsu gestured across the sky above. Three times with his hand and said, there is no such thing in which you can believe, in which you can rely, there is no such thing. What he means by it, and he gestured three times to the sky. Existence is just a vast sky with no end and no beginning, no boundary. There is nothing to believe and nothing to rely. One has just to disappear. All belief is manufactured, and all reliance, relying on a God or relying on a Christ, is out of your own fear. But there is nothing to rely on, and there is no security. Don't cling with anything. Everything that you cling to is your own imagination. Your gods are your imagination. And your philosophies are your imagination. Existence has no gods, and existence has no philosophies. Just a pure silence. But a silence which is musical, a silence which is a dance, a silence which blossoms into many flowers and into many fragrances. A silence which manifests into immense varieties. A silence which is multidimensional. Just relax into it. Don't try to believe or trust, because all belief and trust is clinging. Sikitsus gesturing across the sky above 3 times with his hand, and he said, "There is no such thing. You just please drop the very idea of relying on anything or believing in anything. Just relax. This whole existence is yours. Why do you want to cling to a special part? It is all the same sky, the same silence, the same purity, same innocence." Gayosan asked, "What do you say about reading sutras?" Man wants something. His mind is always finding some way to avoid the nothingness or the wholeness of existence. Gayosan immediately asked, "If there is nothing to believe and nothing to rely upon, what do you say about reading sutras?" Sikitsu replied, "All the sutras are out of the question. Doing things that are given by others is dualism of mind and matter. And if you are in the dualism of subject and object, various views arise, but this is blind wisdom. So it is not yet the Tao. If others don't give you anything, there is not a single thing. Have you ever thought about it, that all that you know has been given to you by others? If you put that aside to sort it out, what is yours? You will find a pure emptiness is yours. Everything else has been given to you by others. Then who you are? A pure emptiness hidden behind all those words and beliefs and religions which have been given to you. If others don't give you anything, there is nothing, a single thing." That's why Bodhidharma said, originally, "There is not a single thing." Bodhidharma's statement is of tremendous value. There is not a single thing separate from the whole. All separation all dualism is the game of the mind. As the mind becomes silent, all that game disappears. All those players are no more there. What happens when you wake up in the morning to your dreams? In the dreams, have you ever doubted that what you are seeing is not true? Nobody in a dream can doubt. Whatever appears in the dream appears to be the right thing at the moment. Only in the morning when you wake up, suddenly you realize that all the night you have been dreaming of things which were not true, which were just mind creations. Flowers in the sky, Bodhidharma's statement that originally there is not a single thing. You see, when a baby comes out of the womb, does he read sutras or not? At that time, the baby does not know whether such a thing as Buddha nature exists or not. As he grows up and learns various views, he appears to the world and says, I do well and I understand. But he does not know, it is rubbish and delusion. Of the 16 ways or phrases of doing, a baby's way is the best. The time of a baby's gurgle is compared to a seeker when he leaves the mind of dividing and choosing. That's why a baby is praised. But if you take this comparison and say, the baby is the way, people of the present days will understand it wrongly. And that is true even today. When I am saying to you, be nothing, I am saying, in another word, be just a newborn baby, a pure consciousness. Undivided into knowing, not knowing. The baby's consciousness is pure. It knows nothing. It does not even know that it is. You must have heard small babies talk about themselves as separate persons. They may ask, the baby is hungry, the baby is thirsty. The eye takes a little time to grow. It takes at least 3 to 4 years for the society to manage a baby, create an ego, to start saying I instead of saying the baby is hungry, I am hungry. And the moment the baby says I am hungry, he is no more a baby. He has entered into the world he has graduated in a way, but according to Zen, once again you have to become just like the baby. This second childhood is the greatest revolution possible. Jesus is right when he says, unless you are born again, you will not understand the truth. He has been traveling for 17 years into the East, and he has gathered much, and that was really the problem why Jews could not accept him. He was talking a language that was not theirs. He was making interpretations of the old Jewish tradition in a way that has never been heard. He has brought from the East, and at that moment the whole East was full of the vibrations of Gautam Buddha. Just 500 years have passed while Gautam Buddha was alive, yet his vibrations were in the atmosphere. And there are possibilities that not only Jesus visited India and Tibet, there is a place in Japan also which proclaims that he visited the place. And in the Bible these 17 years are completely missing. And they don't listen to any other argument, because that will be disturbing to whatever they have managed up to now as their holy Bible. Jesus was much influenced by Buddha's teachings. This teaching that unless you are born again has the flavor of Gautam Buddha, who was continuously teaching that you have to drop everything that has been told to you. You have to forget everything that has been programmed in you. Gautam Buddha brings to the world the first deprogramming philosophy. And when you are deprogrammed completely, who you are? Just a pure nothingness. Just a silence. All words were borrowed. All sutras were given to you. All religions were forced on your mind. You are not a Christian, and you are not a Hindu, and you are not a Mohammedan. You were born just as pure consciousness. You have to attain that pure consciousness again. This is rebirth, and this rebirth brings the Buddha, the pure consciousness, the consciousness which knows no boundaries, hence it cannot call itself I, a consciousness which has become one with the whole, has nothing to say. Buddha, when he became enlightened, for 7 days remained silent, thinking whether to say it or not. Because in every possible way he thought, it will be misunderstood. It is better to be silent. But a compassionate heart could not be at ease either in silence, seeing that everybody needs this exploration, this excursion into himself. And I know the way. If I remain silent, it will be criminal. But if I say anything, then too I will not be absolutely right in saying, because that which is beyond the world cannot be brought into the world. After 7 days, compassion took over him, and finally he tried. For 42 years, went on saying to people and always making it clear that what I am saying, don't take it literally. I want you to experience it, only then you will understand the meaning of it. Not by hearing me, but by experiencing it, by tasting it, only you will know the sweetness of it. Bancho wrote, river, one long line through snowy fields. Life is just a river. A long river, a long line through snowy fields. And then what happens? Each river, small or big, dissolves into the ocean, finds its way without any guide, without any sutras, without any masters. However, it may go astray, zigzag, but finally it reaches to the ocean. And that reaching to the ocean is becoming the ocean. That is the rebirth. That's what we mean by meditation. That's what we mean by the Zen Manifesto. Every river is destined to disappear one day into the ocean. Go dancingly, go joyfully. There is no need to be worried. There is no need to be hurried. The ocean is waiting. You can take your time, But take your time with joy, not with tensions and anxieties. Rejoice and dance and sing and love. And finally, you are going to disappear into the ocean. The ocean is always waiting for you. And even though you are far away from ocean, you are part of it. Always reaching, always coming closer to the ocean. Everybody is going to become a Buddha, today or tomorrow, and there are only 7 days in a week. So you can choose. Manisha's question, Wilhelm Reich says in his book, Listen, Little Man, that he found that man reaches out with his life energy when he feels well and loving, that he retracts that energy when he is afraid. Reich says that he found that this life energy, which he termed argon, is found in the atmosphere outside the body. He says he succeeded in seeing it and devised apparatus which magnified it. Is what he observed so? Wilhelm Reich was one of the unique intelligences born in this century. What he has found has been known to the East as Ara. You must have seen around the statues of Buddha or Mahavira or Krishna, a round ara around the head. That round ara is a reality. And what Wilhelm Reich said was authentically true, but the people to whom he said were not the right people to understand it. They thought he is mad, because he described life as an energy surrounding the body. And it is exactly true. Life is an energy that surrounds your body. Not only your body, but flowers, trees, everybody has its own aura. And that aura, that energy surrounding you, shrinks, expands in situations. In any situation when your energy shrinks, should be thought bad, sick. And in every situation your energy expands, should be respected and loved. In love, your energy reaches out. You become more alive. And when you are in fear, your energy shrinks. You become less alive. Now, The poor Wilhelm Reich was thought by Americans to be mad, because he was not only magnifying that energy, he has found few exercises in which that energy magnifies. He was even catching that energy into boxes. Big boxes in which a man can enter, and if he is sick, he will come out whole and healthy. Naturally, such a man should be thought mad. He was selling those boxes, empty boxes, but they were not empty. He has found ways how to collect the energy which is available in the atmosphere around a tree. You can find that energy sovereign, but with your bare eyes you cannot see. After he was declared mad and imprisoned in Soviet Union, another man, even managed to photograph it, and now it has become Soviet Union's recognized psychology that life is an aura, and the man Kirlian has developed a certain sensitive plate to photograph it. He will photograph the hand, and the hand will come with an aura around it. In a very strange way, his photographs even showed that this man is going to be sick within 6 months. Right now, he does not show any pattern of sickness, but his aura is shrinking at a certain point. And if the certain point the aura is shrinking, maybe the person will become deaf or blind. If the aura around the eyes is shrinking, and all his photographs proved to be right, when he said that this man is in a danger of losing his eyesight, and there was no visible sign, there was no reason to believe it, but within 6 months that man became blind. Now, in Soviet psychology, Kirlian photography is recognized by the government. It is spreading into other countries also. A man can be cured before he becomes sick. Kirlian photography is very predictive. It shows at least 6 months ahead what is going to happen. In the East, it has been known for centuries that before your death, 6 months before, you stop seeing the tip of your nose, because your eyes start turning upwards. They cannot see the tip of your own nose. The moment you recognize you cannot see the tip of your nose, means within 6 months your energy will shrink, go back to its source, and the aura, without any photographical technology, has been recognized by yoga for 5,000 years. But now it can be accepted on scientific grounds. Wilhelm Reich was a unique genius. He could manage to see and feel what is not ordinarily possible. But if you are very meditative, you will start seeing the aura of people, even your own aura. You will see your own hand with the light rays around it radiating, and when you are healthy, you will feel your aura expanding. When you are sick, you will feel your aura shrinking. Something is shrinking within you. When you are by the side of a sick person, you will have an strange feeling that he somehow makes you feel sick, because the sick person exploits on the auras of others. Without his knowing, he needs more life. So whoever has life comes around him, he takes his life. And you know by experience, without understanding, that there are people you want to avoid, because meeting them, you feel sick. Meeting them, you feel that something has been taken away from you. And there are people you want to meet, because meeting them, you feel expanding. You feel more alive. Wilhelm Reich was right, but unfortunately, the masses never accept their own geniuses. On the contrary, they condemn them. Because if Wilhelm Reich is right, then everybody else is almost blind. And in anger, he has written that book, Listen, Little Man. But the book is beautiful. And his anger can be forgiven, because he has been mistreated by the little man, by the mass. He has been thought first to be mad, then forced into a madhouse, and died into a madhouse. In the East, he would have become a Gautam Buddha. He had the quality, the insight, but a wrong society, a society of very little men, of very small people. small-minded, who cannot conceive the vast, who cannot conceive the mysterious, the whole atmosphere is full of life. And if you understand your own sources of life, you will be suddenly aware that birds are alive, trees are alive, grasses are alive. Everywhere there is life. And you can dance with this life. You can start having a dialogue with the atmosphere. Of course, people will think you are mad, because people are still the same. The same people who crucified Jesus, the same people forced Wilhelm Reich into a madhouse, the same people poisoned Socrates. But those little people are in the majority. But Wilhelm Reich's anger is right. Still, I would say, rather than anger, the little men need compassion. He was angry because they misbehaved with him. They destroyed his whole life. Rather than understanding him, he would have opened a new door of experiencing, of loving, of living. They destroyed the man completely. Obviously, he became angry, but in the East, the same little men are there, but the Eastern genius have never been angry with them. Rather than being angry, it has shown compassion. It has felt compassion for their blindness, and it has tried in every way to bring light to them, a little understanding to their heart. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. The Reverend Rump is very excited one afternoon when a new organ is delivered to his church. A large crowd of people gather outside the church to watch as the organ is slowly lifted out of the delivery truck. Suddenly, one of the delivery men lets go of a rope, and the organ starts to fall on top of the Reverend Rump, who is standing beneath it. But as at the last moment, Hamis McTavish pushes the vicar aside and stops the organ before it smashes on the ground. "Bless you, my son," gasps Reverend Rump, picking up himself. "You saved me. When you come to church next Sunday, you can come and play on this new church organ. Ah, sighs Hemis, there is no need for me to go to church, Vikar. Really? My son asks Ramp, why not? You see, Vikar, replies Hemis, I have a church of my own at home. Really? Ask the Vikar, what do you mean? Well, explains Hemis, it is like this. My whole family lives in one room. So we have a 3-level bed. The kids are on the top level, singing all day like little angels. Then on the middle level, there is my mother-in-law. She is preaching day and night, dealing out the 10 commandments and the wrath of God. Then on the bottom level, there is me and my wife playing on my organ. Swimming casually in the warm sea waters of the coast of Africa are 4 huge sharks, jaws, toothy, munch, and little belch. The conversation naturally turns to their little favorite joy, eating. The best food in the world is found just near Australia, says Jaws, the biggest shark. The menu is full of young sporting people with tender muscles and skin well toasted by the sun. Ah, that is okay, replies Toothy, the big white shark. But an even better delicacy can be found off the Canary Islands. The beaches are packed with fat, oily German tourists. Just like butter melting on your tongue. Not bad, interrupts Munch, the oldest shark. But in my long years of gobbling, I find the summer waters off Miami Beach to be the ultimate in dining pleasure. The place is filled with politicians with their giant livers soaked in rum and wine and no backbones. Then old Munch turns to the youngster of the group, Little Belch. He hears a strange sound coming from Belch's stomach and asks, hey kid, what is that noise coming out of your belly? Where you have been eating? Ah, groans Belch, I have got indigestion. I went for lunch yesterday off the beach at Goa. And the strange people I ate there will not stop singing and dancing. Mrs. Nora Boone gets a midnight telephone call from her son, Billy, who just got married that afternoon and is staying at the Swelling Sausage Honeymoon Hotel. Mom, sobs Billy tearfully down the phone, we are having some problems in the bedroom. What kind of problems, Billy? Asks Nora Boone anxiously. Well, Mom, moans Billy, Nelly is laying there on the bed naked and breathing hard. And well, gee, mom, I don't know what to do. It is quite simple, Billy. It snaps Nora Boone in her best motherly voice. You just take down your pants and put the hardest part of your body in the place where Nelly, your wife, you know, where she wee-wees. Ah, I get it. Cries Billy. Gee, thanks, Mom. And he puts down the phone. Mrs. Nora Boone sighs deeply, shakes her head and goes back to bed. But 15 minutes later, the phone rings again. This time it is Nelly Boone, her new daughter-in-law. What is the matter now? Snaps Mrs. Nora Boone. It is your son, Billy. Cries Nelly. He has got his head stuck down the toilet. Close your eyes and feel your bodies to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to enter in. Gather all your energies, your total consciousness, and rush towards the center of your being. Just 2 inches below the navel inside you, the Hara center. With an urgency, as if this is the last moment of your life, faster and faster, deeper and deeper, as you are coming close to the center of your being. A great silence descends over you. And a peace that you have never known. And a light fills your whole interior. From the very center, You can do one thing which is not possible otherwise, witnessing. Witness that you are not the body. Witness that you are not the mind. Witness that you are only a witnessing consciousness, a pure consciousness, eternal, immortal. This is your being and everybody's being. To deepen this witnessing, Nividano, relax. But remember the source of hara, the very source of your life, and flowers will start showering on you. You are melting into a consciousness which is vaster than you. Gautam the Buddha auditorium has become an ocean of consciousness. 10,000 Buddhas are no more 10,000, but a single, a non-dual, pure consciousness without any ripples in it. This is your Buddha nature. Out of this Buddha nature arises all ecstasy, all blessings, all blissfulness. This is only an experiment. It has to become your very life. You have to be a Buddha around the clock, alert, aware, compassionate, loving, rejoicing in life, expanding life, making it a dance, Zen is not a renunciation. It is a rejoicing. It is the manifesto of dance and celebration. Collect all these experiences which are happening inside you. You have to bring them to your everyday life and ask the flame which is symbolized by the face of Gautam Buddha to come behind you face of Gautama Buddha is everybody's original face. It will come behind you. It has been waiting for you to request it. First it will come following you. Soon you will find you are following it. And at the third stage, the final stage, you will disappear. Only the Buddha remains. The Buddha is your nothingness and is your fullness. It is your wholeness. You can call it any name, but remember, it is universal. It has nothing to do with you and me. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas, silent, peacefully, with a grace and a beauty, just for a few moments, to remember where you have been, the space that you entered, the center that you touched, the flame that you have seen. Slowly, slowly, meditation becomes your very life, your very heartbeat. That day, is the most blessed day when you don't have to meditate. You are meditation. Your very being, whatever you are doing, are not doing. Is silent, peaceful, loving, alert and aware of its eternity. This experience is the only sacred experience. This experience brings again back your childhood, a pure silent consciousness, rejoicing in everything that it does, and the whole universe becomes a celebration. Life is no more a misery. Every moment existence is available for you to rejoice, sing, dance, love, and expand your life energies. Mind only thinks, meditation lives. Mind is a very small thing. Meditation is as vast as the whole universe. I teach you the vastness, I teach you universality, I teach you eternity. You are not what you appear in the mirror. You are much more. You are vast, as vast as the whole universe. This declaration is the Zen manifesto.